I'm Lizzie Raber.
And I'm Judy Swartz.
And welcome to Why We Left.
Good morning, y'all.
Good morning. We're so excited to have you.
Yes, and I'm super excited about this week's podcast. I was blown away by the amount of people that listened to last week's episode. Thank you all so much. Yes. It means so much.
We appreciate
that you want to hear what we have to say.
When we started, we said, if there are 50 people that listen to it, we are happy.
Right?
Now we have 43 listens.
Which blows my mind.
It's incredible. I'm losing it.
Same.
How's that coffee treating you?
It's good. It's gone. It's just a little cup. It's just a baby cup of coffee. What do you have going this week, Lizzie? Any exciting stuff?
Okay. I finally got my driver's license.
Yes. Why have we not talked about this yet?
Did I just sound like a tiny rhinoceros there? No, like I was so scared because when I was getting my permit, it took me like 5 times.
It was only four. It was on. Oh no!
Wait, no, it was, no
it was five. It was 5 times. My bad.
The fifth time I got.
I just didn't take you the fifth time. So,
but no. So I went in to like actually do the road test, and I was like, "There's no way I'm gonna pass the first time." And I did.
Oh, look at you.
And the same day I got my license, I drove on the interstate.
That's crazy.
I almost passed out. It was terrible.
Watch out, Tennessee driver. Lizzie's on the road. That's amazing.
It's unsafe. But what about you?
You're a great driver. It'll be fine.
That could be debated, I think, for sure.
I've driven with you. It's amazing.
The only times you've ever driven with me is
in my car, which is a stick shift, which is, you know, a little bit harder to get used to driving.
I mean, I'm low-key impressed with myself.
As you should be.
What about you? How was your week?
It's good. I'm excited because our cleaning business, we're trying to get that off the ground.
That's true.
And we have our business license all set up now so we can really start cleaning some houses.
When I tell you, Judy has been on a roll.
When I want to get something done, I get it done.
Yeah, no, she really does. It's crazy.
It's just God giving me grace, you know?
I mean, you have a lot. I would have lost my patience 85 times by now, but you're doing amazing.
Thank you. But anyways, y'all, Lizzie's going to be sharing her story with us this week, and I'm very excited about it because I've been so honored to be a part of her journey for the last year and a half. And it's been amazing to watch the person that she's become. It blows my mind. And I'm so grateful that I've gotten to be a part of this. And I'm so grateful that she is where she is. And she's happy. She's living her best life. And it's amazing to see.
I was happy until Harry Styles got a buzz cut. And Louis Tomlinson shaved his beard. What is happening to me?
I'm so sorry.
Anyways,
it's been a crying time.
It really has. Thank you for saying that, Judy. That means a lot. I'm actually gonna tear up already. We're like 2 minutes in.
I have tissues. Okay, Lizzie, do you mind describing your childhood and your family a little bit?
I would absolutely love to. I grew up in a family of, oh man, a lot of siblings, goodness. Well, not that many, but to me it's a lot. Wait a minute. I had 3 older brothers and 2 older sisters. And there was me, so 5 older siblings, right? And then there was me. And then after I was born, mom couldn't have kids anymore. And she really wanted a big family, so she started doing, she adopted. And then after she adopted, she started doing foster care, which it was a very straining thing for our family because my mom, she did things to keep her mind off of other things, right? There was at one point we had 5 foster kids.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
And then also she would babysit as well.
Oh, wow.
So she would babysit. She had foster kids. And then she adopted Brennan. At the time, he was like 4 or 5, I think. So many kids.
That is running around. That's a lot of kids.
And then,
bless your hearts.
It was very straining. Most of my growing up, I was like taking care of kids. And
that's a lot.
Yeah. It was very stressful. I was really close to my dad. Very close to my dad.
Yeah.
I would, everywhere he went, I would be right behind him. Like, we would always go to this, in the town that we lived in.
Right.
There was this little marathon, like, gas station thingy. And we would go there every Saturday. He would take me with him and I would get a little bug juice. And
yes, I remember those. I forgot about those. That's crazy.
Yeah, he would give me a little bug juice and then some chicken strips.
Delicious.
Right?
Best. Nothing like gas station food.
They're honestly. So I was very close to my dad. My older brothers, I wasn't really close to them ever. My older sisters, I was pretty close to both of them.
Right.
And mom already, she would have really high blood pressure. And so she would, just the smallest thing, she would lose it. And so it was always very strange. And then me and my mom, we were almost too similar
for
our own good. So our personalities would clash. And then I don't remember a day in my life that I was close to my mom.
Yeah.
And her and the brother just older than me, Jared, were very close.
Right.
And Jared and I, since we were pretty close in age, we would always fight.
Right. Yes, I feel that.
And mom would always take Jared's side because, so that kind of put a little strain on our relationship as well. So I was never close to my mom. I wish I would have been because I always would look at girls with moms who they would just go home from school and sit down and talk to their mom. I was always so jealous of those people, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Girls who talk to their moms about boys.
Yeah.
I cannot fathom that.
Yeah. I know.
I could never.
In fact, she wasn't even the one who told me about my period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my older sister Orpha did. I don't remember having a single conversation with my mom about anything deep, which is very sad.
That is sad.
I don't.
You missed out on a lot.
Yeah. To this day, I miss her so much, but I think I almost miss the idea of her more than I miss her.
Yeah, I feel that. That's kind of how it was with my mom when I was little. We just didn't really have much of a relationship. Yeah. And I know what you mean. It's crazy how you can miss something that you've never had.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's because it's something we're supposed to have. Yeah. We're meant to have. So we do feel a loss when we don't have it.
Like I said, it was just a very strained situation, but it was normal to me.
Right.
Like, a lot of the things that would happen that I would be like, oh yeah, this happens to everybody. But then when I move out, and I remember telling Joe a couple of situations that happened, and I was just talking about it, whatever.
Yes.
And she's like, Liz, that's not the norm. I was a family girl. I wanted to be around my family. My family was the center of my entire world.
Right.
And so now that I don't have that, it's easier now, but at first it was the biggest transition.
I remember that. I remember when you first moved out, how much you tried reaching out to your family and how much you wanted them in your life.
Yeah.
And they just were not very receptive.
I would call my dad every day and try to have a conversation with
him. I remember just watching your heart get broken over and over, and it was hard to watch.
Wasn't fun, that's for sure. I've quit trying to reach out now. Pretty much.
Yeah. Because
it doesn't help. And I think at this point, for so long, it was almost like I was the parent and they were the children. And I was trying to bring them back to me.
I feel that.
This is not my responsibility. If there's anything that I can do on my end to fix it, I can't force them to be different.
Exactly. You can't force somebody to love you.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you remember what your view of God was like as a child and what you thought about God?
Well, like I said, I was Amish, and I'm sure there are some Amish people that don't see it this way, I hope. Okay, so on Sundays, if we weren't going to church, because you know how they would do off Sundays, we wouldn't have church, and we would all go downstairs and have a little Bible study, right? But you read the chapter, you don't ask questions, you don't talk about it, you read the chapter, and that's it. And then for prayers, my dad had this little book, and every night before we went to bed and every morning we woke up, we would read a prayer out of the book.
Oh, wow. So the only prayers you heard were prayers written in a book?
I've never heard my dad. And I've asked him about it before. And he brings up the whole verse of praying in your closet. Each their own, right?
Yeah.
But when I was probably 11 or 12-ish, my sister Orpha, she left the Amish church, started going to the Mennonite church. And she met a couple friends who were really leading her to God, right? She started because Orpha was my best friend at that point. I would always sleep in her bed because I felt safe with her.
Aww.
And
that's amazing.
So every night before we went to bed, she would pray with me. She would read me a chapter from the Bible and then explain what it meant. And that's the first real glimpse of God that I ever got.
That's amazing.
And it was so special because sometimes now, even when I feel kind of insane, I think about that time. I knew that I was going to be okay.
Right.
Right around that same time was when I was like, Orpha, like, I want to be saved. Like, I want.
Right.
So she helped me. She helped me pray. And, like, she helped me confess.
Right.
And like, the amount of guilt that I had at that age. Right. Ridiculous. Like.
All the shame and yes. condemnation that you feel.
And so that's when I finally kind of saw the truth. But the thing is, if you're around a family who the norm is to just read a prayer out of a book and not really study your Bible, all of that, and like not even try to get close to the right. God, it's more of just like, it's more God is like kind of separate from us. And so when you're in a family like that, it can get so easy to just go back into that.
Right. Like, because you don't have a lot of support.
I felt a closeness to God when I finally gave my life to him. Yeah, so then after a while, I just kind of went away because it was normal for me to just go downstairs and pray with the family, you know.
Right.
But I remember right after I got saved, I would, like, every night get down or we would, like, kneel down by the couch or whatever. Dad would be saying his Amish prayer.
Right.
I wanted little siblings so bad. So, like, pray on Jesus, like, give me a little brother, a little sister, every single night, the exact prayer.
It's adorable.
And, no, this was before. I'm sorry, I'm getting my timelines messed up.
That's fine. Don't worry about it. Just keep talking.
So, it did happen for me then. And I felt like after that, then we got Brendan,
right.
little brother. And I was like, it took about a year or two, right?
Right.
But he hurt me that whole time. It was just like a whole nother thing. And I got closer to God again. So yeah, it was just kind of on and off through my whole childhood. There was never a point where I would have said, like, no, God's not real. Even today, like, it happens to me. Like, I'll go through a phase where he just feels very far away.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that I can do to, like, I don't know how to get that back. Then it usually does.
Yeah, I feel that.
So yeah. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
I would like to insert a trigger warning here for sexual assault. If you would rather not hear this part of Lizzie's story, please skip ahead to minute 31:22. Okay, so Lizzie, I know that you were assaulted as a child. Do you mind talking a little bit about how that affected you?
Yeah. So there were multiple times.
Right.
There was one when I was 6, and then there was one when I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was 13, but all by different people. When I was 6 was my sister Mary's ex-boyfriend at the time. When my parents found out about that, I was probably 12 or 13-ish, I think. Yeah. And I remember talking to my sister about it because I had talked to my friends about it. I would be talking about it like it was normal. Like it was
sad.
It was, like, so normal. It was just like, it happened and it was fine.
That's, wow.
And, but I
It's not fine.
No, absolutely not. But I had that guilt. I had so much guilt, right?
Yeah, and, like, the shame and the humiliation that you felt.
Exactly. So I remember talking to my sister about it, Mary. I was like, please do not tell anyone. I don't want mom and dad to find out. Because mom and dad are going to be so mad at me.
Right. That's so sad. You thought your parents would be mad at you instead of him.
Yeah.
You know?
I was telling her about it the night before I went to school. And I get home from school. And mom meets me at the door. She is sobbing. And I'm like, Mom, like, what is happening? Because I didn't think that Mary would do that to me.
Right.
Like, in hindsight, now I look back, it's like she did the right thing.
Right. Yeah.
She was just standing there, like, looking at me crying. And she's like, why wouldn't you tell us this? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, he hurt you? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this is, I don't know what's going on. I just get home from school and I meet this. And she's like, Liz, like, she's like, we want you to feel safe to talk to us about these things. Like, she's like, Dad is absolutely heartbroken right now. And then I was immediately like, oh, they're mad at me. Like, I knew this is going to happen. And I was like, Mom, I'm so sorry. Apologizing. I'm like, I don't know what I was thinking. I'm so sorry. And she's like, Liz, we're not mad at you. She's like, it's not your fault. You were
right.
And I'm sorry, I'm tearing up a little. Anyways. Yeah, so that one, they reacted as they should.
Absolutely.
Also, when they found out about Chris Allen, which was Orpha's brother-in-law.
Right.
Which that one happened when I was like 11 or 12, I think. I'm really bad with timelines.
That's fine. So, stuff happened. It doesn't matter when it happened. Yeah. It just matters that it happened, you know?
So, I remember my mom was always the first one to find out. I don't know how. I guess we were alike enough so she would know when things were, like, kind of not right.
Right.
So, I remember I was sitting in the bathroom one day. I was sitting there. I think I was plucking my eyebrows when I shouldn't have been. And she comes busting in the door. And she's crying again. And I'm like, oh, goodness, what is this? I thought maybe I forgot to wash the dishes or something. And she's like, Liz, why wouldn't you tell us this? You've got to tell us when stuff like this happens.
Right.
Dad didn't talk to me about it on either of those occasions. But Mom would always, she would tell me how Dad was feeling about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was like she was not mad at me again. But she was like,
that's good.
She was like, we are so disappointed in him. Disappointed, not angry. Disappointed.
Wow.
And the very next weekend, after I tell my parents about this, Chris Allen and his sister Bethany came down for a horse sale, I think it was, because we had like a little sale barn. He came down the next weekend for the sale, and he spent the night at our place.
Your parents knew about what he had done.
Yeah.
And he spent the night at your place.
He spent the night in our shed, but at the same time, it's like...
He's on the property, man.
But at that point, that had gotten so normal for me. Like, the assault. And so I felt almost like an attachment to him.
Yeah.
Because it was like, he loves me. He did this to me, so he loves me.
Oh, wow. That's so sad.
At that point, I still didn't see anything wrong with what he did.
Wow. So you were confused.
Yeah, I was like, what's happening? If that were my kid and I found out that they had been assaulted, I wouldn't let that man near my child.
Oh, absolutely. You gotta protect your children at all costs.
So, yeah, he stayed in our shed. He was so disappointed in our family, apparently.
Wow.
That they didn't let him stay in the house.
Oh, wow. I don't even know what to say right now. Yeah.
No, it's insane. So, we never really talked too much about that. Dad, when the whole thing happened with Anson, he was like, if you want, you can press charges if you want, but we probably shouldn't.
Wow.
It's, like, up to you, though. But for Chris Allen, it was never an option for me.
Like, they would not let you turn this man in.
They didn't even talk to me about it. Oh. It was just like, oh, it happened, and that's terrible.
And we're disappointed in him. Yeah. But what can you do?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then just let him on their property. Fun.
This is breaking my mind.
And then the James situation, which to this day is one of the most traumatic things that I've ever, like, dealt with, and I still struggle with it sometimes, and I think the reason it's so hard for me is because none of the others ripped my family away from me.
Right.
But James did. The whole situation with James.
I mean, he was your brother-in-law.
Yeah, and then I remember this going on for a long time. And do you know what? It was the same situation as with Chris Allen. I was like, this is normal.
Right.
This is literally what happens to everybody. Like,
that's really sad.
My young mind obviously couldn't comprehend that this isn't
right.
This isn't normal. No 25-year-old man should be like,
absolutely not.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it was normal. And when I tell you I was starved for any little shred of attention, I would have done anything for it.
I feel that.
And so when these older men, and do you know what? The predators know.
Oh, yeah.
They know
who's vulnerable.
Absolutely. I've gotten so many people that are like this. Like, you can't just blame this on James. James is not the only one that needs to be held accountable for this. I was 13 years old.
It's never consensual. If you're under 18, it's assault. If you're 13, that is assault.
Yeah.
No way is that consensual. Didn't your sister tell you that it was consensual when you told her about it?
She also said, you know so well that James is not a predator. And you know that he's not a danger to kids.
That is crazy.
And it's like, I don't know that because I was a kid. He was a danger to me.
Yes.
He found someone that was vulnerable. It did, and the sickest part about it is, he didn't even care that it was his family.
Right.
He didn't even care about that. It was just like, vulnerable person, let me go ruin her life, right?
Right.
Like, it's disgusting. I don't know. After it went on for about, like, 6-ish months to a year, because
that's a long time.
I remember calling Orf, because they live 4 hours from us.
Right.
And I couldn't just walk over to her house and tell her. So I called Orf. I was being eaten alive by guilt. I was gonna lose my mind.
That's horrible.
So I remember calling Orf about it, and I told her, like, Orphan, like, this has been going on. I'm so sorry, and I feel so bad. Like, and I was thinking, she's never going to talk to me again.
Right.
Right. Like, this is, and she's like, well, do you want me to talk to Mom and Dad? Like, I can tell Mom and Dad. And immediately, I was like, no. Like, it's not going to do anything. At that point, my parents were so suspicious of everything I did. Like,
right.
And I remember, this is one thing I forgot to mention. After my family found out about what happened with me and Chris Allen, my brother came up to me and he's like, you understand that nobody's going to trust you around their kids anymore.
What?
Like, you're a danger to kids.
What?
And?
That is so wrong.
And I believed him. For years, I was just like, I shouldn't even be around kids. Right. What if I hurt one of them? I would never. Oh. Now I know that. But it was like, he planted that in my head. I'm literally a danger to kids. And
that is disgusting. I'm so sorry.
So she offered to talk to Mom and Dad. She's like, She says, we can get you counseling.
Oh, wow.
We can get you counseling.
What about sending a pedophile to jail?
What about that? Like, if that were my little sister, because I have a little sister.
Right.
Aaliyah, if 13-year-old Aaliyah came to me and she says, Liz, your husband is doing this. Immediately calling the cops.
The only reason you don't call the cops is because that man is about to be 6 feet under.
No, there is no way. And so I was like, no, just don't tell Mom and Dad. And that's another red flag. I'm 13 and I'm telling her not to tell Mom and Dad that her husband is doing this to me.
Right.
Immediately tell Mom and Dad.
Immediately.
Call them.
Then Mom and Dad.
Exactly. Like, it makes no sense. And then, like, they came down, like, one of the next weekends, her and James did. And I remember, like, James and Orpha were having this big argument, whatever. Mom and Dad always let James and Orpha stay in my room.
Yeah. Were you in the room, too, or?
The first couple times I was.
Yeah.
Because James would always be like, no, it's fine. She can sleep in here.
Oh, wow.
And that's when it all began.
Right.
So, I remember that weekend, Orpha came. James was, like, arguing with her. Went in my room, locked the door, and Orpha was like crying out on the couch. Here's another thing. Orpha's like 6 months pregnant at this time.
Oh, wow.
So he was in there like locking the door, pouting, being a little shyster. And then Orpha came in there and we had this whole conversation about him. Guess what this man had the nerve to say? He's like, I am sick and tired of Liz playing the victim. He's like, I am also a victim.
What? Oh, that is outrageous. He's
like, I'm a victim too. And I'm sick and tired of her playing the victim card all the time.
What?
And that was the one time Orph stuck up for me. She was like, James, she is the victim. I don't care you say. She is the victim. She's the kid.
Right.
That was the first and the only time she ever said anything like that.
Well, I'm glad she did that.
It was so convenient that there was nobody else around to hear.
Right.
So that whole thing happened. And then it just stayed silent. By the way, that night, James and I came to an alliance.
Right.
Alliance, quotation marks.
What does that even mean?
We were like, it's fine. You're not going to tell anybody. I won't tell anybody. We can just go on with our life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was like, you're forgiven. You're forgiven. Like, everything's fine.
What?
Oh, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Poor little child, you just did not know which way to turn.
No. So, Mom and Dad never found out about it for a long time until after I left.
Right.
I left when I was 17, when I officially left, and then I told some people in Tennessee about it. Because at that point, I was still thinking, this is terrible for me. I am the guilty person here. If anybody finds out about this, no one's going to talk to me ever again.
You were certainly led to believe that by the adults in your life.
Finally, I told some people about it. Well, I told my therapist first, because I was like, I've never spoken about this to anyone but Orpha in my life.
Yeah.
But I needed to get it out.
Right.
I had to do something. So I told Marcus Durley, my therapist, about it, and he was the first person that was like, no, this is not your fault. You cannot walk around thinking that this is your fault. He's like, you were a child.
Right.
But I was like, okay, he's right. I was not old enough. First of all, a 6-year-old man who is almost 6 foot tall and 350 pounds, what was I going to do about it anyways?
Right.
And also, I went through that most of my life, and it was normal to me.
Right.
If it's just not
part of growing up, that's crazy.
And like, I was over here thinking, I am a dirty person. Like, oh, I'm just sleeping around. And I was a baby. What the heck?
It's heartbreaking.
So yeah, Marcus, we do a couple sessions. And finally, it's like, it's not my fault.
I am so glad that you reached that realization.
I told a couple people about it. I, one night, I was just sitting at home. I get a call from Morpha, mad. She's like, I can't believe you would turn this into CPS. If you go through with this and you press charges, you will never see me or my kids ever again.
Oh, wow.
Like, you're going to lose your place in our family. We will ice you out. So like, I immediately called Judy. I was like, I don't even know what's happening. I didn't turn anything in. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So I'm confused. And I'm scared out of my mind because, like, you know how important Orpha and her kids are.
Yes. You would do anything for them.
Yeah, so I was calling Judy crying. I'm like, I don't know what's happening. Orpha just called me and told me this. So Judy immediately comes over. And then Orpha calls again later and I forget that second call.
Yeah, I don't remember all of it. I just remember her literally screaming at you and just absolutely livid that this truth had come to light.
Yeah.
And that this sin had been uncovered.
So Judy came over, and then I called Keturah and Deborah, which shout out to you guys. You guys are amazing.
Right.
So they came over, and then Dad calls me.
I think you called
him. Oh, I called Dad?
Yeah.
You called him. That night's so blurry to me. But I did listen to that conversation again.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So sorry.
So Dad calls me, and immediately, he's like, I am so disappointed in whoever called CPS. I'm so disappointed. Okay, this is the crazy thing. He was not disappointed in James whatsoever.
Right.
He didn't even mention James'
name. No, he didn't.
He was disappointed in whoever called CPS, and they're trying to get back at him get back at Dad. This situation's not even about you, Dad. Like, what?
Right.
Like, he's every time something like this happens, immediately making it about himself.
Yeah. It was crazy. That was the first time you had ever told him about James, and he immediately went into, I can't believe this has been reported. You make sure you ever tell who reported it that I'm very disappointed in them. Just said it over and over.
Yeah, another thing he said, like, I can't believe they wouldn't call me first and tell me.
Right.
What? If this is how you're going to react, who wants to tell you stuff like this?
Right.
And do you know, I was listening to our recording over again.
Yeah.
Broke my heart to hear myself apologizing for this situation. I was like, I am so sorry that I'm letting the family down. No. And then I was begging him. I begged him to ask me if I was okay.
Yes.
I was like, I need this from you right now. I need you to ask me how I'm doing. You're my dad. And he, every time I asked him for that, he would like ignore my question completely.
Yep.
Just ignored it.
Yep. Start ranting about how you weren't Amish and how you needed to come back and be Amish again. It was one of the most heartbreaking conversations I've ever heard.
It was terrible. It was
just like, it broke my heart listening to it. I can't imagine what it was like for you.
I was listening to it as another person, and I was like,
yeah,
that little girl. I was so alone and so hurt.
Yep.
I had friends around me, but what I needed in that moment was my family and my dad and my mom.
Right.
Just to support me, and they couldn't do that for me.
Nope.
To get back to your original question, when my mom found out about it, she called me, and she was like, well, remember how many times you would be in my room, my place in the house where I can do whatever I want. I should feel comfortable to do whatever I want.
Right.
You were in your room with your bra, and what do you think's going to happen? You're pretty much
blamed you.
She's like, you're pretty much asking for it. In my own room, where feel the safest.
I have no words.
Answer your question. For when they found out about James, they were more concerned about their reputation and how their community was going to react more than they were concerned about their daughter's well-being. And it makes me sick. I've made so many excuses for my parents. Right. And you know what? I was scared of the community too, because that community is vicious.
Oh, yeah.
Literally anything, and there will be 700 stories out about you the next day.
Yep.
And it is miserable, and I understand why they were scared of that, okay?
That's no excuse, though.
Let's not give them a single excuse to abandon their daughter when I needed them the most, just because they were afraid of a couple runners.
Yep. And it's not okay.
Let me mention something. If anybody in Davis County is listening to this, and you have been a part of those rumors, you should be ashamed of yourself. You should be ashamed. Because you are hurting so many people. It's not okay. Live your life. Do what you need to do. You don't have to spread rumors and say terrible things about other people just because you're bored with your life. And I'm sure that everybody who has helped spread a rumor, they have been a part and they know how it feels. I don't understand why.
Oh, yeah.
How it's so easy for them to just
Right? Just turn around and do it to somebody else.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I kind of went off there. I don't know. Whole rumor thing. It's the sickest thing I've ever heard of in my life. It is not a necessary part of your life.
Gossip is evil. It tears people apart. It is absolutely not okay.
If you have to sit there and talk about other people's life because you don't have enough fulfillment in your own life.
Right.
You need help. So that's all I got to say about that situation. So yeah, my family didn't take it very well, but
no, they did not.
There's a couple bitter feelings there, and I'm not yeah. even going to try to hide that.
Right.
I've been trying to work on it, and you know,
yeah,
but it's going to take it a little bit of time. I
think. Yeah, it will. There's nothing wrong with being angry. God gets angry when people harms the innocent. What's that Bible verse, Matthew 18, that talks about it is better for a millstone to be hung around your neck and you be drowned in the deepest part of the sea than to cause one of these children to stumble? God takes the harming of innocence very seriously. And God himself gets angry. There's nothing wrong with being angry.
But I don't want to live my life angry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it destroys you eventually.
I don't feel guilty about being angry.
Right.
It's kind of miserable for me.
Yeah.
To hold that.
Yeah. It takes time to let go of, but yeah, you definitely shouldn't be ashamed or guilty of being angry because that's a very natural reaction.
Well,
that was a lot. Thank you for telling that story, Lizzie.
Yeah. Of course, I hope it wasn't like too long and like
no such thing. I'm so glad that you are on the other side of it and you're able to see how evil and vile what that man did was.
Yeah, exactly. And oh, he's in jail now.
In jail as of this morning. Yes. He's in jail. Yes.
I kind of feel bad for being excited about it, but also like this needed to happen for so very long.
Right. So he can't do it to more girls because exactly. He will. He has.
He has a lot of victims.
Yes. Way too many. And it needs to stop.
And if you are listening to this, you know who you are. We love you. And you're so strong.
Yes. So proud of all the victims who came forward.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't for nothing.
It was not for nothing. Okay, so switching directions here. Can you talk about the first time you came to Tennessee? What led to that?
Yes. So, I was a feral person. I was doing all the things that should have not been happening at 16. The year I was 16 feels like a lifetime because of the amount of terrible, terrible, terrible things that I did. I think it was a year of literal insanity.
Yeah.
I would lie to my friends. I would lie to my parents, lying to my family, lying to almost everybody that I knew. Like, and sometimes just because I could. It was out of hand. Like I would sneak out at night, like go to parties, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so my family got sick of it. If that was my daughter, I would have been like, girl,
get your life.
Yeah. So in my family, right before they sent me to Tennessee, they just found out I started smoking weed.
Not the barrel gun.
So they found out I was smoking weed. The most scandalous thing they'd ever heard. Don't do drugs, kids.
Stay in school. Don't do drugs.
So they found out about all that stuff. Okay, I feel like I was a pretty good liar, but apparently not good enough because they always knew when I was lying. I'm pretty sure I was a little bit insane because we had so many family meetings where we would sit out in the laundry room. My whole family, all of my older brothers and sisters and my parents would be sitting out there with me. They were begging me to get my life together.
Oh, wow.
You gotta figure it out. Like, you can't keep doing this. Yeah. And I would be sitting there. I would start crying. And then immediately it would switch to just laughter. I would just laugh and laugh and
laugh. Oh, wow.
Just gives me chills when I think about it. Like, I might have been possessed. I don't know.
I mean, you had been through so much trauma at that point. It's understandable that your brain might not be functioning perfectly.
But here's the thing. I was very angry at my parents when they sent me to Tennessee. Very angry. But I will give them the fact I was so unhinged. And I was not in a stable place at all. I was not a good person to be around.
Right.
So I remember they gave me a whole list of names, people I couldn't hang out with.
Oh, wow.
People in Indiana who I couldn't hang out with. They were mostly like people that weren't Amish and another.
Yeah.
They say that was the root of my problems. So the very day they gave me the list, I went out with one of the people in the list.
What? Just the pure spite.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to hang out with Claire now, so I'll see you later. I went with Claire to Walmart and I get a call from Dad, and he's like, get home right now. And I'm like, all right, Pops, like, I'll be home in about 5 hours. It's fine. He's like, no, right now. And okay, I would do this thing. I would leave the house, right? I would leave the house in my dress. My cutesy little Amish dress.
Yes.
Immediately, when I get in the car, just take it off and I would have, like, jeans and a crop top. Right. So, we're coming back. I told Claire about it. I was like, no, but I don't have to go. And she's like, you're gonna go home. Like, you have to. Okay. Like, okay. That's fine. Yeah. So, she brings me back home. So, Dad meets me. I walked in the lane because they didn't know I was off Claire. But I walked in the lane and Dad met me at the tree. And he's like, all right, like, go upstairs, get your bags back. Like, you're leaving. And I'm like, no, I'm not, actually. Like, I'm going out with my friends tonight, so I can't leave tonight. And this was the day before my birthday, actually. This is the day before my 17th birthday. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going nowhere. And he's like, yeah, you are. Like, there's this couple in Tennessee. They're married. Right. They're older people. They said that you could stay with them for a while. Okay, first of all, this is not happening. I'm not going to stay with an old Mennonite couple in Tennessee. Like, I've never met these people before. Right. You can't expect me to. And he's like, you have to. Like, Mom's already upstairs packing your things. So, if there's anything that you want to take, you better go get it. We're leaving in 10 minutes. And I'm, like, screaming at him. I'm like, I hate you. You're the worst dad ever. If you send me, I will never talk to you again. You're terrible. You're evil. Like, said such unfortunate things. And I regret all of them today.
Right.
And I guess the reason I'm saying all of this is because I want people to know. Like, I'm not over here thinking, like, I did everything right.
Right.
Like, I did some terribly unfortunate things. And, like,
right.
I understand how my family was like, something gotta happen. So they bring me to Tennessee. And James, actually, was the one that drove me to Tennessee.
Oh, my goodness.
And guess what? The whole ride, like, I was, like, crying.
Right.
He was laughing at me. Laughing in my face.
Oh, that is evil.
Laughing in my face.
That is straight evil right there.
I was, like, devising plans of how I could sneak out of the vehicle.
Right.
And just run back home. I'm not doing this. Like, you cannot make me. Did it, though. So, we get to Tennessee. It was, like, 10:30. No, it was actually at 12. So, it was my birthday by that time.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, you guys are really leaving me in this strange place. I have no idea. At on my birthday. Like, goodness, this is insane. We meet these people. And immediately, I'm like, ugh.
This isn't gonna go well.
So, and before I left, they took my phone. They took everything that I could possibly use to get a hold of other people. So here they go. And mind you, my parents had never met these people in their life.
Oh, wow.
And and these people didn't have any kind of license to take care of kids.
Oh, that's, like, crazy.
Didn't have any therapist license. Yeah. Nothing. It was people who were like, oh, yeah, we'll take care of her.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know I'm saying that a lot, but, like,
yeah.
Wow.
So they took me to my room where I was going to stay. And I was just in there. At that point, I just turned off all my emotions. I was nope, nothing. You're not getting anything from me. And Dad was, like, sitting in there begging me. He's like, just tell me you love me so I can leave. I just, like, ignored him. Like, turned my back to him.
Right.
I feel so bad about it now. Yeah. Like, I've never seen my dad cry that much. He was shaking. He was so devastated. So I know that it wasn't easy for him to leave me there. Like, so he comes over and just hugs me for, like, 10 minutes. He's like, I love you so much and I don't want to do this, but you need help. Like, something needs to happen. So he leaves. Like, in the first week that I was there, these people that I was staying with sat me down on the couch and they're like, we're going to be your parents for right now.
Wait, they really said the word parents?
Well, actually, they said mom and dad.
Yeah.
They said, we're going to be your mom and dad for right now. Every time I wanted to talk to my parents, I had to go and ask them.
Did they say no? Did they say yes?
There was only one time they said no, and because they were mad at me. They were so mad.
Oh, wow.
Because I was standing up for myself, and they're like,
yeah.
And like, they had never seen me do that. Almost the whole 3 months that I lived with them, I turned off all emotion. I was just, like, walking around.
Right. Like, just trying to survive.
I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, so basically that's how I got to Tennessee. And then me and these people had that big argument where they kind of manipulated me into doing something, and then I got mad. Like, I was like, you know what? Yeah. No, like, this is the end of this. You're not gonna sit here and lie and manipulate me just because you can and because I'm, like, younger than you and you're, like, you have more authority.
Yep.
And then I was like, I need to talk to my dad right now, and they're like, no, you're not talking to your dad.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, really? Are you not letting me talk to my dad because you know you're wrong? Like, what? And then the man who, like, so I was talking to the wife at that point.
Right.
And then the man comes in. He's like, we made an agreement with her dad. Like, anytime she wants to speak to her parents, she gets to. So I called dad. He's like, go to Marcus Durley's, which was that was my therapist at the time. He's like, go to Marcus Durley's so we can all have a conversation.
Right.
We get to Marcus Durley's, and, like, immediately Dorothy sits down. She's like, we just don't know what we're going to do with this little girl. Immediately starting to, like tall crap. And, like,
make it all your fault.
And Marcus was like, stop. Just stop right there. to her. And like, and then he's like, the camera was, so I went out with him, and immediately like I lost complete control. Like I was sitting on the gravel, couldn't breathe. I was so devastated because I was like, how did I get here?
Right. Wow.
And I was like, I don't want to go back there. Like, right. Please don't make me. Like, I don't want to spend another night with
these yes. people.
And he's like, you don't have to. He's like, that's you know, amazing. If you don't want to stay with them, nobody can make you.
Right. That's amazing.
And then that very night, he took me to live with Lynette. Lynette. My hero. My hero. I love her so much. She's incredible.
Such a gem.
So, yeah. So, that's how the whole Tennessee thing went.
The first time. Because you lived with Lynette for what? A couple months?
Yeah, I lived with her for about two, three months.
Yeah. And this is when you and I met. When you were living with Lynette.
Yes. When Jody and I met.
Yes.
And Jody took me to get my first pair of jeans.
Yeah. That was so fun. That was such a good night.
And then we went to get frozen.
Yes.
Frozen yogurt, was it?
Yes. Yeah, that was the first time you and I ever hung out.
And we just, like, connected so hard.
Immediately. Yeah. It was amazing.
We started hanging out all the time right up.
Yes. There. And she also started working in the same place yeah. I worked. Yeah. So, just got to hang out with each other every day.
That was such a good time in my life.
Right? And it lasted for about 2 months.
Yeah. At that point, I'd started dressing not Mennonite. I was like,
yeah.
Okay, I was, like, kind of dressing Mennonite. I would wear, like, skirts and shirts. This is the most scandalous thing you'll hear this week. I was wearing bill hats instead of a head covering. How could I possibly?
The scandal.
Oh,
shock.
Do you even want to talk to me after this?
I don't know.
Anyway.
It's going to take some time to process. So, and that was when you really started being happy.
I was so happy. I was like enjoying my life. I had friends. I had great friends. I was hanging out with my friends all the time. I had a good job. I had a good place to stay. Everything was just going amazing.
It was working out for you.
And then Dad all of a sudden just like, so we're coming to pick you up tomorrow.
For no reason.
Yeah. It makes me so grouchy how many times they've done that. Just abruptly ripped me out of something.
Right.
They couldn't even give me a 2 weeks notice. They had to be like, no, you're leaving now. Or you're leaving tomorrow morning. Or you're leaving in 10 minutes.
Just no notice. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. So after I went back to Indiana yeah. for a little bit, I was there for about, was it a month or two?
I think it was 2 months.
Yes, I was there for like 2 months and I thought I was doing amazing. Like yes. I was staying at home all the time. Like I went out a couple times. I wasn't like going crazy with it. Yes. I was just being a teenager. I was yeah. I would go out and hang out with my friends, right?
Yep.
And then, but the thing that really irritated them is I had a lot of friends out here, right?
Right.
And not even friends, like family.
Yeah.
People who were there for me no matter what. Like, I would call Judy like every night.
Yes.
When Judy and I would
we talk so much. I called you more than I've ever called anybody in my life.
I feel so
I was worried about you and I was like, I gotta be there for this girl.
The amount of times I would call Judy and I would just be sitting there with like four crying babies just trying yes. to take care of
you
everyone.
You always had like four babies hanging off yeah. of you. So, I love how much you love children and how much you just want to take care of children.
The little kids in my life are so important to me. It's
yeah. It's beautiful.
So they were mad at me because they were like, you're not spending enough time with your family, you're always in your phone. They were mad, and then I found out I was talking to a friend that is also friends with my parents, and she's really close to my parents. And she's like, I heard you're going to Ohio for 5 weeks. I'm so proud of you for that. I'm proud of you for making that decision.
Wow. And like, you were like,
I'm sorry,
coming what decision?
In. Decision where? I've never made a decision in my life. What are you talking about? And then immediately, she was like, I have to go. And so I immediately, my anger was turned up to 70 million. Okay, yeah. I was mad. You're not doing this to me again. No, I have not done anything, mm-hmm. like literally anything, to deserve this.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when you left to go back to Indiana. I remember talking to you and how much your heart was for your family and how you just wanted to have good relationships with your family. Yeah. And you were thinking, maybe if I go back to Indiana, do whatever they want, it will restore our relationship.
Yeah. I remember showing my mom a voice message that Joe had sent to me.
Yeah.
She's like, I miss you so much. We love you. Mm-hmm. We're praying for you. We want the best. Like, if there's anything we can help you with. I showed it to my mom because I was like, this is so sweet. Like,
right?
She just rolled her eyes. A little bit stupid.
Expressing love is stupid?
I'm like, oh. Like, they were, it was almost like they were jealous of the relationship I had yeah. with the people from Tennessee. But they never tried to have that relationship. Yeah, so I cut myself off there. So I went storming out to Dad, mad on the hornet. Okay,
this was after you find out
yeah.
that And they're shipping you off to Ohio.
I was like, what do you think you're doing? And he's like, well, Liz, like, all the excuses. You're on your phone all the time. We can't have this. And I'm like, I have done everything you have asked me to do and more. I don't know what you want from me. Like, I have done all of the things. And he's like, no, you know what you did.
Oh, wow. Couldn't even say what you did.
Do you know what he says I did? So I was hanging out with my friends one night. I had a little private story.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So I put on this little video. It was me and one of my guy friends he's like my little brother, okay?
Yeah.
And but there was like a little rap song playing.
Yeah.
Like there was like a hard beat. It was coming from the van. And one of my other friends, he was twirling me.
Yeah.
My little finger. It was
adorable.
It was not sexual at all.
No. Okay? It was just a cute little ballroom twirl.
And I got accused of making a sex tape with this little boy.
Oh, so your dad saw this video
and said it was...
Oh, that's a sex tape.
Yeah.
Well, that's really something.
He's like, well, all I know there was some sexual music and you were dancing with this boy. Like, it was the most innocent dance you've ever seen in your life.
Oh, yeah. I saw the video.
It was me twirling in circles. Like, girl! So that was apparently the reason.
Okay.
And... So, yeah, so he's like, yeah, you're leaving Sunday. So this was a Friday night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, no, I'm not. And he's like, well, you don't have a choice. Like, you're going to...
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Once again.
And I was like, all right, like, you know what? You're going to send me off? I'm going to go hang out with my friends tonight. And usually he always says, I can't. Like, you can't go hang out with your friends. And I was like, I don't care what you say. Like, I'm hanging out with my friends tonight and you can't stop me.
Because, right. Like, last night.
If you're going to send me away, I'm going to hang out. He's like, no, but I need you to hang out with your family tonight. And I was like, no. I'm not doing that. Like, my family has done nothing but disappoint me in the last 3 months. Like,
right.
I'm not doing this. Like, I need some space from you. And so I went out with my friends. We ended up going to a party. And then I get home, go to sleep. I wake up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And my mom and my dad are in my room. I'm like, what in the heck? They're packing up my bags. And I'm like, what are you doing? Because I thought I was leaving the next day. We're taking you to Ohio. And I'm like, no, you're not. I have a whole nother day. What do you think you're doing? And he's like, yeah, like, we're taking you right now.
So what was this place that they were sending you to in Ohio?
It was a girl's home. Apparently, like, I think what he kind of told me was, like, it was gonna help my idea of the Mennonite and Amish. Like,
okay.
So basically help me.
Interesting.
Help get me back to that. And also help me deal with trauma. And I'm like, oh,
okay.
So I'm like, well, I'm just laying in my bed. I was like, no. And I could feel like the desperation rising up. So just like,
yes.
Get out. I was like, you know how that feels? Like when you just feel it building up. I spring up out of my bed to try to take off running. I was like, I'm getting out of here.
Right.
I try to go out my door and my big ass brother is just standing in my door. Because they knew I was going to do that. I had enough strength. To, like, my mom tried to stop me, and to this day, I feel so bad about it, but I, like, pushed her. I was, like, blinded. I was, like, desperate.
Yes.
I was, like, desperate.
You weren't really in control of yourself at that point.
And so I tried to, like, I pushed my mom. She didn't fall. Thankful. You know, but mom had to be dramatic about it, so she really stumped.
Yes, yes.
And then, so my brother's standing, and my brother's taller than everything else, and he's like, you know, pretty, like, I mean.
We're just filling up the doorway.
I don't want to, if he's listening to this, I don't want to say he's muscular, because I would really feed him. I love him, by the way. He's amazing. Now I love him. Yeah. I didn't have a lot of love in my heart for him at that moment. So he's standing in the doorway. And I, like, try to push him away. Like, I bounce back, obviously. So my dad grabs me and, like, pushes me against the wall. And he's like, you gotta stay. And you gotta, like, you're gonna go. Like, you have to. I managed to, like, somehow, I don't know how, to this day, to like, get away from my dad. I, like, pushed him. And then barreled through my brother. I absolutely, like, demolished that guy, you know? And I remember talking to my dad about this whole situation. And, no, you were there, too. And
yes,
like,
yeah.
Well, you don't know how strong she is. Like,
yes, because I started, he actually left bruises on me. And so I confronted him about it. I was like, leaving bruises on your daughter? That's abuse. He tried to claim it was self-defense. He was like, she's so strong that I just had to, which is like, no, you don't have to grab your daughter and slam her against the wall.
Long story short, that was funny to me. It gave me a little bit.
It gave me a little bit of, like, grown ass man is saying this tiny little teenage girl. He had to protect himself.
And at that point, I was probably like 100 pounds. I was not eating. I was like, I was depressed. Anyways, another story for another day.
Yes.
Oh, technically, so it was like a 12-hour round trip. So they take me. We get to this place.
In Ohio.
Yeah, and it's like almost like it's beginning of summer, so it's hot. We're in this van. We get there. Dad's like, all right, get out of the vehicle. And I'm like, no. No, this is, at this point, like, I'm not doing anything you tell me to. I'm staying right here.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not staying here. You can't make me, like, I haven't done anything to deserve this. You can't just do this. So they turn the van off as well. So I'm sitting here in that, this, like, boiling hot van, sweating, crying, because I'm like, why are they doing this? Felt like a nightmare.
Then I mean, it is. It was.
And this little girl who runs this place comes to, she's not little, and she's not a girl. She's old and bed. She comes over to me, starts talking to me like I'm 2 years old. She's like, do you want to come see our puppies? I have no interest in puppies right now, girl. What are you talking about? Like, my whole life is falling apart, and you're asking me if I want to go see some puppies?
Wow.
Anyways, so I'm like, nah, I'm good, thanks. Like, don't even worry about it. We sit there for another, like, hour and a half. My dad comes over, and he's like, all right, like, here's what we're going to do. You either stay here, and you can come back home after the 5 weeks, or we take you back, and you immediately leave our house, like, and you don't come back.
Yeah.
He's like, you don't come back until you want to go back to this place.
Yeah.
And at that point, my little sister, Leah, like, the most important thing to me ever, and to this day, yes, the most important person in my life. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you won't see Leah. Like, you can't talk to Leah.
Just,
you're completely cut off until you can come to this place.
Wow.
So it's basically a really hard decision there. Because at that point, like, I was with Leah every single day. Every time I had a spare second, she was on my hip. Mm-hmm. Like, but I didn't know what else to do. So I was like, I gotta go. Like, you take me back. So on the way home, my brother Jesse was the one that drove me. And he's like, I hope you fail. I hope in a year. He's like, you are gonna be homeless on the street. He's like,
that's really harsh.
He's like, you're not gonna make it. He's like, you think that life is easy and you think you can just breeze through it. He's like, you're not going to. You're gonna be homeless.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And I told Joe about that. And she's like, that is a curse over you.
Yes. Curses.
We prayed that away. And now look at me. It's almost 2 years later and I'm still not homeless.
Oh, yeah. You're going strong.
Come back. I immediately called this little girl right here. Jody.
Yep, that's me.
And I'm like, can you come pick me up? And she's like, oh, this is great because I'm actually in Kentucky. Her husband.
Visiting my boyfriend. He's now my husband, but he was my boyfriend back then. I was visiting him in Kentucky. So I left and I drove to Indiana.
And it was storming so hard
that night. Oh, dude, that was crazy. Yeah. The thing I remember about that drive is the crazy storms. Like, there was tornado warnings out. There was hail. It was raining so hard. Like, a couple of inches of water on the road. And I was just, like, right highway down. Yeah. I was like, I have to go get this girl tonight. I gotta get through. I was praying the whole way. And there was so many times that my car would start just, like, hydroplaning off the road.
Oh, you never told me this.
I told you about it a little bit. But it was just, it was a wild night. But I made it to Indiana.
And you got to meet Sierra then, right? Sierra?
Yes.
Sierra came over and helped me pack all my clothes.
Yes.
Love her. She's amazing.
Beautiful human.
Isn't she?
Inside now.
I still talk to her to this day. Yeah, so she came and got me. And I went, because at that point, I had like $10 in my wallet.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes.
I had like $10 in my wallet, and I knew that I made a lot of money from my work.
Yeah, your parents took all the money you made.
Dad said, like, all of his kids until they were 18 didn't get any of the money. I felt like he could have at least given me like $20.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I mean, you deserve to keep all of it.
I was going to go talk to him about it. Like, can you give me a little bit of my money back so I can actually live?
Right.
And I went to his door, his mom and dad's door. And I know they weren't asleep yet.
Yeah.
But I sit there and knock on the door for like 5 minutes. They had locked it. Wow. Locked the door.
Weren't even going to tell you goodbye. No,
like, wouldn't talk to me. So I was like, okay, well, this is it. I have to restart my entire life with $10. And I did.
Yeah, you did.
And, well, I mean, I had a lot of help. Mark and Joel, biggest shout out to them.
Ever. Oh, my word. It's just the best people.
Like, I talked to Joe, like, 4 times at that point.
Yeah.
By the time I came, and I called Joe, and I was like, is there any way, because they have a little Airbnb apartment thing attached to their house, and I was like, is there any way I can stay with you guys for just a little bit until I can get back on my feet?
And she was like, yes, girl.
Immediately was like, of course, like, 100%. So I get
That's amazing.
And then also Jay and Gina's. So Jay gave me my job back immediately. He's like, oh, yeah, absolutely, you can work here. And then I had a job. I had a place to live. And I lived at Joe's for like a year-ish.
Yeah.
Almost. No, it was almost. Not quite a year. Yeah, but I lived with him for a minute. Anyway, so yeah, that's how that all went.
So you ended up back in Tennessee.
And I am not on the street. And I'm not homeless.
No, you are not. So impressive. Just built a whole life off of $10. It's crazy. So impressed. So proud.
That was a journey and a half there. It feels like sometimes when I look back on my life, it doesn't even feel like it happened to me. It was like...
Dude, I feel that so hard. Yeah. When I think about my life of when I still lived in Ohio, mm-hmm. it feels like a separate reality. Yeah. It does not feel like all that stuff happened to me. It's the weirdest feeling. I'm so glad we're both here. Do you mind talking just a little bit more and telling us how you found God once you were in Tennessee?
Yes. This is my favorite story to exist.
I'm so excited to hear it.
Because my salvation story, it's not big, it's not flashy.
Right.
It's not like there were a lot of people around me. This only happened probably 6 months ago-ish.
Yeah.
Kind of up around there. I can't exactly remember. Like I said, terrible timelines. My whole life is just one little ball squished together. So things at work were kind of going a little bit sideways. Right. Like there were things happening. Yeah. I was absolutely crushed because I was like, I'm going to have to move back to Indiana. I don't want to do this. So I was in my little apartment. I got home from work and I was like taking a shower. And I just started like, I do this thing. I talk to myself, right?
Right.
And it's insane.
I mean, you have to when you live alone.
Yeah. So I was like talking to myself. But yeah, today was good. Man, but this is so frustrating how everything is going. And then it kind of turned into me talking to God almost. And then it turned into like desperation and anger. Like, why is this happening to me right now? Like, what am I supposed to do? Can you do something? Or you be like, you're not even there. If you were there, you would be doing something for me. Like, you would not just be letting me struggle like this and feel so alone.
Yep.
And like I said, not flashy. I just felt like this calming presence.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it, but it felt like a little silhouette of me, but it wasn't me because it was just, and it just like came across me.
That's amazing.
And I just knew it was him. It was almost like he was telling me like, you're going to be okay. Like you have come through so much already. Like you're going to be okay. You're going to do this.
That's beautiful.
And I'm going to be here with you. And
That is beautiful.
I started like sobbing because every time I feel the presence of God, oh, it's the most overwhelming thing.
Yes.
It is so overwhelming.
In such a good way.
Yes. At this point, sitting in my shower, like just sobbing. I just knew that I was like, I was going to be okay. And I don't know if that's necessarily like the story of my salvation because that happened when I was like younger. But that was like almost the second time where it was just like, I haven't left you since then. Like, I'm still right there. If you would just trust me, like you just trust me.
And, right.
And I did because then, okay, that wasn't 6 months. When was that doctor's appointment that we had?
Bro, I don't remember. That was a few months ago.
Okay.
That was a while ago.
It was like a week or two before that.
Okay, yeah.
Because then I was like, let me test this out because I was going to that doctor's appointment and I was like broke. I am to this day.
Zero money.
Zero money. Because I was having like trouble with my health and I was like, I need to figure out what's going on. I gotta figure it out. So like, I said this in the last podcast about how I went to the doctor and I didn't think I had the money and it just was there. And I started just trusting. I just trust him with everything now.
Yeah.
And like, even now, like, I get overwhelmed. Right. And like, I'm like, how am I going to pay for it? Because how am I going to put new tires on my car? How am I going to make insurance, whatever. And I get overwhelmed sometimes. But it's like, I just know it's going to work out. It's going to happen for me.
Yep.
And so, yeah.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. What's
There's up? This quote that I absolutely love. I think it's by Elton Trueblood. But it says, faith is trust without reservation.
Yeah.
I think that's so beautiful.
That is beautiful.
You know, as somebody who has a lot of trust issues, it can make it hard to have a relationship with God. Yeah. But the point where you learn to just trust him with everything, so much freedom in that.
100%.
So much comfort to be had.
Kit actually said this verse yesterday, something about how the birds, like he provides for the birds.
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, why wouldn't you think he would provide for you?
Yep. It's like, beautiful.
That gave me so much peace again.
Yes.
Because I was struggling so bad yesterday. I had such a rough day. And then Kit told me about that. And I was like,
yep.
I'm going to be fine.
Let me go find that verse so I can just read it. Okay. I found the verse, y'all. This is why I tell you not to worry about everyday life. Whether you have enough food and drink or enough clothes to wear. Isn't life more than food and your body more than clothing? Look at the birds. They don't plant or harvest or store food in barns, for your heavenly Father feeds them. And aren't you far more valuable to him than they are? can all your worries add a single moment to your life? There's more. The whole chapter is just beautiful.
I love that on so many levels.
Right?
Beautiful.
Nothing like God's word to just lift you up.
Right? There's always a verse or a chapter for the situation that you're in.
Oh, yeah.
To make you feel better.
Oh, yeah. Is there anything that you wanted to say that we didn't get a chance to?
I've went on for about long enough, I think.
Thank you so much for telling us your story, Lizzie. I am incredibly honored that you shared it with me. And
thank you for listening.
I'm just blown away.
You've been so patient with me and just kind, and I appreciate that a lot.
Well, you deserve it. You deserve all the patience and kindness and love.
I love you so much.
And I love you so much. Man, this is that was a lot. That was a beautiful, heartbreaking, wonderful story you told. And I'm so excited that our listeners get to hear it.
I think it's very draining to share that story.
Oh, yeah.
But I just hope that somebody can hear it and just know that, like, whatever you're going through, no matter how big or small, you're going to make it out the other side. And you're going to be okay.
Yep. You got God on your side. Nothing's stopping you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I guess that's all we have for this week. We love you guys. We're so grateful that you're listening to what we have to say. And Lizzie, do you want to, like, pray for these people?
Sure. Dear Jesus, thank you so much for giving us this opportunity to just share stories, hopefully encourage others. We just thank you for your blessings and how you protect us and how you provide. And just if there's anyone, Lord, that is feeling alone or afraid or just unsure, just lead them to us or just help them feel your presence and show them what to do and what you want from them and show them your will, Lord. And yes, just thank you so much for Judy, and thank you for putting her in my life. She's been such a blessing to me, and everybody just loves her so much. Anyways, so yeah, that's all I got. In Jesus' name, pray. Amen.
Amen.